We go now to the Middle East, where COVID-19 is threatening an already strained healthcare system for Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. In those areas, Palestinian officials have reported nearly 500 cases and just 2 deaths. So far, pre-existing security restrictions have played a role in preventing a more rapid spread of the virus in Palestinian communities.
My hometown, it's called Mukhmas. It's in counted as in East Jerusalem. It has one entrance and you can easily try to control it. So thank God until now, zero cases we have.
That's Dr. Motaz Abdullah Siam. Dr. Siam works at clinics in both East and West Jerusalem and says that they've developed clear protocols for dealing with possible COVID-19 cases.
We are prepared for any patient with coronavirus. We try not to have any patients with fever or shortness of breath or any signs or symptoms with related to coronavirus. And we try to manage them on telephone and then direct them either to come for a physical examination or go to a hospital. Or now in East and West Jerusalem, of course, we have the ambulances who go to the house of the patient and they check him right there to decrease the susceptibility for health workers.
But Dr. Siam also points out that the healthcare system in East Jerusalem looks very different from the one in West Jerusalem.
On one hand, we have governmental and private sector hospitals in West Jerusalem compared to charitable hospitals in East Jerusalem. In certain areas, we have shortage as far as no gloves and no gowns. In certain areas, the situation is still under control.
And while the coronavirus outbreak does appear to be under control in the Palestinian territories and East Jerusalem, Dr. Siam says that the Israeli government has not been proactive in protecting Palestinians.
The Israeli government prohibits Palestinians from all kinds of activities in East Jerusalem, not only medical. We can mention also political, social, cultural, you name it. And until late in time in this pandemic, few to no precautious measures were taken to prevent the spread to the Arabic community in East Jerusalem, which could have been vital in that period. Keeping in mind lack of cases in East Jerusalem until late time, until the past month.
For Dr. Siam, the need for assistance right now transcends political conflicts.
During pandemics, it's not elective to help other governments, to help other needy persons. From my point of view, it's crucial that we can get not only us, I mean all the countries, all the needy countries in the world. It's crucial to get the aid to encounter this pandemic. If not now, like when?
Amjad Iraqi is an editor at 972 Magazine, an online news outlet covering Israeli and Palestinian issues. He's also a policy analyst for Al-Shabaka, a nonpartisan think tank focused on Palestinian human rights. And he told me there's been some sharing of medical supplies and information between the Israeli and Palestinian governments, but he also pointed out that in East Jerusalem, the Palestinian government has been blocked from stepping in directly.
The Palestinian Authority wants to assist these hospitals in East Jerusalem, but the Israeli authorities are refusing to allow that to happen. They see it as a legal political activity as the Palestinians try to assert some kind of influence in the city, which the Israelis regard as their own, quote unquote, eternal undivided capital. So you end up having a situation whereby you have these hospitals that are neglected and underfunded and under-resourced, with the Israeli authorities not really caring enough about them, while also blocking the Palestinian authorities are able to provide what little support they have to it. Essentially, everything that goes in and out of Gaza is controlled by an external authority, and primarily Israel. So this not only means the movement of people going in and out, but also the supplies that can be sent to Gaza, such as medicine or equipment or ventilators. In the West Bank, it doesn't have the same blockade, but it's still placed under numerous occupation restrictions. Again, the crossings are also controlled by Israel, including military checkpoints, which are run by Israel, which also monitors goods coming in and out. Then you also have, for example, certain trade agreements that were signed since the Oslo Accords in the 1990s, such as the Paris Protocol, which basically means that all imports and exports, including of medical supplies and other basic necessities and things that could help Palestinian hospitals in normal times, let alone during a pandemic, that all of these have to go through Israeli regulations, additional Israeli tax authorities. Sometimes the PA has to actually overpay for even basic medicines to supply to its people, and it's not according to the PA's time, that it's the Israeli authorities that in the end decide when to process and et cetera. And then, of course, you have the wider structural difficulties in, you know, it's everything from Palestinians who have to worry about being evicted or having their homes demolished. In Gaza, the fact that the blockade has essentially made it impossible to keep proper public sanitation in numerous communities, that the water itself can't go through the filtering process that it needs to make sure that you have clean drinking water. In fact, the vast majority of drinking water in Gaza is not healthy for consumption. And this is just a few examples of how, you know, even the basic necessities that you can't get by to ensure your own health.
You know, so many of the things that you are listing and the conditions that we see in the West Bank and Gaza are sort of ingredients for a pandemic to spread quickly. Limited access to medicines, close living territory, sanitation issues, like you've just mentioned, with water. And yet the case toll so far seems relatively low. Do we have any sense of what explains that?
I mean, part of it is the fact that both the Palestinian authorities in the West Bank and Gaza acted extremely quickly. They both have very strong executive powers and security forces, at least insofar as the areas that they're concerned. In the occupied West Bank, 60% of that territory is actually under Israel's control, and about 35 to 40% is controlled by the Palestinian government. And within those pockets, the fact that the government can kind of deploy its forces means that you know, the health ministry directives that they have, oftentimes in cooperation with Israeli authorities as well, can be implemented very quickly and effectively.
The WHO and the Red Cross have sent some medical supplies into Gaza to help with the pandemic. Has that been helpful at all? Do we know?
In the end, these are only going to be very short-term, very small measures. In the end, this is equipment that will run out very quickly and it can only be used for a limited population. And in the end, humanitarian aid is not the solution for it. It's a plaster, but it's not the solution. In the end, these Palestinians, that they need the ability to kind of control what they can purchase, when they can move these equipments and the basic medical supplies, to be able to freely move patients, especially from Gaza, where it's almost impossible to get a medical permit, let alone a medical permit in time to get to a hospital that is properly equipped. Without those basic freedoms, without those basic liberties to take those decisions and to access the world fully, without the Israeli authorities putting numerous obstacles, any support that comes from international organizations just won't be enough.
Well, just last week, we saw Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his main political opponent there, Benny Gantz, form a unity government. Do we have any sense of how that may affect Palestinians and their ability to get hospital care or aid?
In the end, it won't really affect it. For all the political differences that are between the Prime Minister Netanyahu and Benny Gantz, they're quite united in many respects about how to think about and engage with the Palestinian people. And just a prime example of this, when in the coalition agreement that was signed just last week, one of the prime subjects that they had raised was actually not about how to tackle COVID-19, you know, effectively in Israel, or let alone even the occupied territories. One of the core components was to say that we actually want to annex huge parts of the occupied West Bank into the Israeli state. These are areas of the West Bank where you have Israeli settlements, almost exclusively for Jewish citizens, where the Israeli authorities have control over Palestinian natural resources, including farmlands and agriculture. This has been a long time objective for numerous Israeli authorities. These areas have been under de facto annexation for years, for decades. But now they just want to kind of make it official with a law to give that stamp. So what that's showing us, among many other examples, is that for Israeli politicians, the Palestinians are not people to help. They're not people to assist. It's the question of what can we take from the Palestinians in the meantime, while this pandemic is distracting the world, is distracting Palestinians, to give the advantage to the state. It's a very hostile take on how we should be perceiving the occupied territories, not a matter of aid. And that will continue.
Amjad Araki is an editor at 972 Magazine. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Lizzie.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.